My name is Lieutenant Jennifer Craig. I'm with the Office of the Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, and I'll be moderating our call. Make sure to all the bloggers on the line, make sure to clearly state your name and state the blog that you're with. Today, our guest is Lieutenant General Norman Sipe. He's the 12th Air Force and Air Force Southern Commander, and he will discuss the interest of including updates on Reaper, Predator, UAVs, Air Force operations and medical readiness exercises in Central and South America, and the Air Force's work on the A-10 Thunderbolt wing crack issue. So with that, sir, I'm going to turn it over to you if you want to start with the opening statement, and then we'll go ahead and with the blogger's questions.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer, and I hope you can all hear me. And, again, I apologize that I can't actually be in the building. This will be my first interview on a speakerphone on a BlackBerry in downtown D.C. That being said, I'll be short and sweet with my opening remarks because I'm more interested in hearing what's on your mind with regard to your questions, but certainly an exciting time for us in both 12th Air Force and Air Force's Southern, both you know, as we continue the long war on terrorism, as well as our smart power, soft power engagement in South Central America and the Caribbean. We had a very, very successful year, as many of you know that are on the net or have read about the things that we've done down in the area of focus, particularly with our medical readiness exercises, our subject matter experts that travel, as well as our cooperation teams. And one of the areas we've been very, very pleased with was our inaugural Operation Southern Partner, where we took a regional focus, and our plan is to do two regions out of the four regions in the AOF each year, where we'll take a single large airplane, put 60-plus airmen on board, representing about 30 different career fields, and travel to four countries for a days and focus on areas that are very, very rewarding, not only for our airmen, for the partner nations that we do doing one in summer to the following year. From a standpoint of plenty of challenges as we again prepare our airmen, our families, as our equipment continue to deploy to the main area of focus, obviously in Afghanistan, and it's not been without its issues. As we mentioned in the opening statement there, aircraft that come with aging aircraft that many are unexpected. Most significant to me as the 12th Air Force Commander is A-10 wing issues that have grounded a large part of our fleet, but we've been managed to bring most of those airplanes back up. The other issue being the continued demand for unmanned aerial systems here, in particular the MQ-1 and the MQ-9. And as you all know, we'll get miles here with, I think, 500 here in the February-March time frame, which is pretty significant considering that it took us till 2000 to get to. That one, I'd like to just go quiet and answer your question, if that's all right.
Sir, there was a kind of a break in what you were saying, so we heard some of it. So if the bloggers can't hear you, I'd recommend the bloggers ask you to restate your answer to one of the questions, if that is okay, sir?
That's perfect.
Okay. Let's go ahead and with the – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chuck.
Somebody's not on mute. I can hear crowd noise in the background.
Okay.
I think that's what the problem is.
Okay. If whoever had just joined the call recently – when the Lieutenant General is speaking, if you can put your phone on mute, that would be a big help. With that, let's go to Sagar first. Sorry about that, Sagar.
Good morning. General Sagar, this is Sagar Patak from horizontalrain.com. Thanks for speaking with us this morning.
Thank you.
My blog is very experience-oriented, and I try to get the readers into the moment and have them understand what they saw or felt during a flight or event. And I've had the opportunity to witness your team in action at the FADAI trade show this year and the NAWIN exercise. My understanding is that you're going to be doing another event in Chile called SALTRE in October, and that Chile is signing onto the new state partnership program. It seems like your relationship with the Chilean Air Force is growing. Can you tell us a bit more about that relationship and where you see heading in the next few years or 2009?
Yes, sir. First of all, that was a great article you wrote on your firsthand experiences flying in KC-135 and experiences at the, but our experience, or our relationship with the Chileans just continues to grow and continue to strengthen. They are certainly a regional influence in that part of Latin America, and they're very much involved in many of the issues that are of concern to obviously our Air Force in the United States. With regard to the exercise, the Salitre, it will be a multinational exercise. It will be hosted by the Chileans, and we'll be participating with aircraft from Mountain Home and from New Orleans. And we look forward to interaction, I believe, with both Brazil, we hope the Peruvians, potentially the Argentinians, and ourselves there. We try to make it a true and multinational exercise and bring all the benefits of engaging with numerous air forces when it comes to sharing tactics, techniques, and procedures, and just things that are common to all airmen that slip the surly bonds. With regard to I'm sorry, I missed the second part of the question as far as the other that you referenced, the Chileans. Oh, the State Partner Program, that's a significant event. In fact, Admiral Stravitas will be joining the governor of Texas when we sign that agreement in March with the Texas Guard there. And not only is it is beneficial from a military standpoint, but from a civilian standpoint, the trading of ideas, things that are very common to the nation and to the state of Texas. We also have ongoing plans, a strong economic base with California, because much of the geography of and the climatology of Chilean is mirrored in California. So there's many challenges, many similarities between the two countries there. So again, this embracing of the Chileans and vice versa, just a benefit to everyone.
Thank you. And let's go ahead and go with the next blogger. Chuck Simmons, please.
Good morning, General. Chuck Simmons from America's North Shore Journal. I wanted to discuss the drone program. Approximately how long does it take for an already aircraft qualified pilot to become qualified on the drone, and what types of new skills does a pilot need to learn to operate a drone effectively?
I don't have the exact time, and thanks for the question, and good morning. I don't have the exact time it takes to put a pilot the drone program or the UAS program, the FTU. We've actually cut the number of days of training down significantly in order to just through experience and through feedback as far as what needs to be taught, what doesn't need to be taught. And we're able to produce our pilots in a much faster rate, which is good for all of us. The skill sets are obviously, you know, how do you find something that that when you're sitting in a container with no air, no feeling about you as far as that you would experience in an airplane. The other skill sets are obviously, while you're doing this, you're in control of vast amounts of airspace. You're de-conflicting many times with other aircraft in the area. You're coordinating with the ground commanders and our airmen that are associated with the ground commanders. And, you know, and then just the ability to be able to understand what you're seeing through that predator camera and be able to put it to use as far as from an intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance perspective, or in the event that you're going to have to use lethal employment, how to take that information and to ensure that if you do go lethal, if you go steal on target, that you've identified the correct target, you've coordinated the right people, and you're sure when you pull that trigger that you're going to be successful with your results. So lots of skill sets that are no different than an A-10 pilot close air support or an F-15E pilot or F-16 pilot doing close air support, but obviously one that many of our pilots that come from other weapon systems are not familiar with. Over.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll go around after everybody gets a chance to ask their first question. David, you're next.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is David Axe with War is Boring. Can you hear me okay?
David, I got you loud and clear. Thank you.
Great, thanks. So can you tell me, is there any coordination between the Air Force's soft power activities down south and the Navy's soft power efforts? It seems like you're hitting some of the same countries. Do the two services coordinate?
Yes, sir, we do it. In fact, Southern Command, puts out a hitter campaign plan that Admiral Stavridis coordinates on and approves. And then each of the components, with their resources and with their capabilities for that upcoming year, working with Southcom, who's worked with all the country teams and the ambassadors, lay out a game plan for whether it be medical readiness exercise, whether it be, the USS Comfort going down on a, 6-month various port visits there. But we deconflict, we collaborate, we try to, maximize each of our potential there. And where we can share assets, we certainly do so. But we make sure that, again, it's all lined up with the ambassadors, with the Southcom Theater Security Cooperation plan itself that comes from the theater campaign plan. Over.
Well, a quick follow-up. Do you ever share any assets? I mean, do the efforts ever overlap?
In a way of shared assets, we actually had on the Kearsarge here just recently 40 airmen that were either medics or engineers that were part of that team that did the deployments both on the eastern and western side of the area of focus there. We look at Operation Southern Partner in the future of putting our potentially Navy, Army component representatives and go downrange with us, and they can engage with a partner nation soldier or partner nation sailor while we're doing that with our partner nation airmen. Over.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, let's go with Paul, please. Paul McLeary, are you still on the phone? Okay, let's go ahead and skip to Colin, please.
Morning, General Colin Clark at DOD Buzz. I am interested primarily in the A-10s, given the operational implications for Afghanistan. I want to make sure that we add up-to-date numbers. I remember my colleagues at Air Force Times said that in early December, about half the fleet were grounded because of wing cracks. Where are we now, and do you see operational impact from these cracks, and how quickly can you overcome whatever gap there might be?
Well, yes, sir. Initially, our focus was on the those airplanes that were deployed to the AOR, and we've got those airplanes very quickly either replaced or did the inspections and found that they were okay and very little impact on our operations. As far as some updated numbers, with our thin skin wing cracking there, we basically inspected almost 200 of the 244 aircraft, and had about 40% that are in a grounded condition, and we've got about 41% that are back into flight, another 20% that are flyable until we get around to inspecting them there.
Sir, if you could, you're breaking up a fair amount. Was that 40%?
Right now, we're showing about 40% of the thin skin, which is about, I'll let you do the math, that's about 98, are grounded, and they're either out in the field being repaired or out in depot.
So 40% grounded.
And again, they're all being worked at this time, so
right.
We expect by June to have all the repairs completed. We've got 40% that have been inspected and have returned to flight, and about 10% that are continuing to fly that we find an opportunity to do the inspection, which is not required at the time.
All right. So does that mean that you have enough planes to do the missions that you're being asked to do?
That's absolutely right, sir.
All right.
particularly in our schoolhouse at Davis-Monthan, our priority has been to continue to graduate the students so that we can get them to the replacement units. And we've had to then minimize some of the flying for operational pilots. But, living at Davis-Monthan, I've watched the wing there, do the repairs, working with the field teams, and they're back to a pretty aggressive schedule. If I could, let me just take you to the thick skin. As you know, there was six of those 112 been inspected, and it found about 30% that were grounded that then we expect to have repaired by June. We've got almost 50% back returned to flight, and about 23% that we're going to continue to fly, and then they can be inspected at a later date. So what started off as a pretty challenging logistical operational issue, we've managed to bring it under control through a lot of the hard work by our airmen at our depot and our folks at the Air Force Materiel Command.
So bottom line, you're able to supply the COCOM with the assets he needs.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. If I can just go through the numbers, because you were breaking up quite a bit. Of the thin skins, you said 30% should be grounded, that were grounded should be up by June.
We've got 40% grounded. No, we expect them all up by June. And for the thick skin, we've got 30% right now are grounded. And, again, we expect those repairs to be completed by June.
And 23% will continue to fly because they were inspected and found safe of the thick skin.
That's correct. And the 20% on the thick skin.
All right. I guess next up.
Okay. Did anyone else join the call? Just wanted to make sure I didn't forget anybody. Okay, let's go back around one more time. Sir, if you have some time, Lieutenant General, do you still have time to answer one more round of questions?
Hey, there's a bunch of journalists at the Pentagon right now with questions. We'd like to get a first question in if possible.
Okay, roger that.
My name is Caitlin Harrington. I'm calling with James Defense Weekly. Sir, I was wondering if I could follow up with you a little bit on the UAVs. Could you talk about training? I know the Army and the Air Force were working toward common training standards. And I also was wondering if you could kind of bring us up to date on that. And also talk about whether there's any, like, movement toward having enlisted people flying UAVs, where that stands as well.
You know, I lost the last half of your question. As far as us collaborating with the Army on UAV standards, that ongoing. I wish I was more of an expert on that as far as exactly where we are. What I'll do is Captain Brochure brings it back to me, and I'll get you a better answer. Repeat the second half of the question. I just lost some of the sound here.
Oh, sir, I was just wondering if there was any movement towards setting up training standards so that enlisted people could fly UAVs.
We're not ready yet to our enlisted force flying the UAV. As you know, we've started a beta test where we're taking officers or so that have never ever flown an airplane before, and we're going to put a program to the schoolhouse there at Q1 to see exactly how they do. And then from there, we'll continue to look at other opportunities for other folks to potentially move into this career field based on the results of that beta test. Over.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Jennifer, I'm sitting right out the mall entrance here, so people could wait maybe 5 minutes. I can maybe walk and visual with everyone.
That'd be great, sir. 4E811.
Okay, roger that. The blogger's on the call. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
Okay, roger that.
Yeah, I'm on my way.
Thanks. Sir. And who's still on the call?
Colin, sir.
Colin? David?
Fogger.
I'm sorry?
Fogger,
okay.
And this is Captain Bagger. We're still in the Pentagon. We've got the conference room open.
Okay.
If he's going to come in here, he can get on the line.
Okay, roger that.
The BlackBerry's obviously giving us some problems.
Yes, yes, understand.
Yeah, if he had an iPhone, he'd be fine.
Yeah, I'm still here too, Jennifer.
Okay, good. Thank you, Chuck. Was Paul on the line, or was I imagining that? Did he come on early?
Maybe it was that extra bourbon you had for breakfast.
No, I don't think so. Okay, I thought Paul was on, so.
He might have been. There's been all kinds of beeps in and out.
Okay. No, that was you, Colin, flying over from Australia. But
was it? All
yeah.
right.
You know, I'm a little slow at the uptake here, so.
Hey, Jennifer?
Mm-hmm.
Can we get those thick and thin skin staff numbers again if you get a chance to ask the general?
Okay.
Yeah, because he was dropping out so much. It was
the thin skin one was 40-40-20.
We'll just have him repeat it one more time. Chuck, I appreciate you saying that. Just one more time, we'll have him restate it. Captain Figgard?
Yeah.
The bloggers on the line want the general to repeat the numbers again. When he was speaking on his BlackBerry, it was hard to hear. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
And now, guys, I'm...
I am so sorry. Sir, we still got the conference line open.
Okay, great. I hate it when it goes from four lanes to one lane and you're not in the right lane.
Hey, good to see you again.
Hi, Amy Butler.
Amy, good to see you again.
Sam McGrone, Air Force Science.
Nice to meet you. Sorry, I understand you're new to the Air Force Science.
Yes, sir.
Let's start
Caitlin
here.
Nice to
see you.
Thank you.
And sir, I'm going to open the conference line back up. The bloggers did ask if you could repeat the numbers about the thick skin.
Yeah. I'm going to have to reference some notes on that.
Okay. Lieutenant Craig, are you there?
Yes, I am.
We've got the general in the conference room. Can you hear us well?
Yes, I can. All the bloggers on the line, can you hear them okay?
Roger.
Yeah.
Okay. And Captain Figgard, with regard to the question I'd asked before the general returned, if you can repeat those numbers.
Sure, gang. And again, I apologize for conducting part of the interview in a van. We're here now, whether you like it or not. Thick-skinned A-10s, again, some approximations, 31% grounded, 46% have returned to flight, 23% are flyable but awaiting inspection. We expect all the grounded airplanes to be done on or about June 9. I went down to the depot there at Salt Lake City just a couple days ago, as well as visited the line that they set up at Davis-Monthan, and they are turning out airplanes as fast as they can. And some great Americans, both wearing a uniform and not wearing a uniform, are doing some great work there. From a thin skin wing aircraft standpoint, 40% are grounded out in the field or in the depot. We've already put 41% back into the fight, and about 20% are flyable awaiting inspections. And again, we're expecting a June 09. And again, talking to the engineers at Ogden, there's no reason not to believe that we can't make those dates. And as we stated, the most important thing is that we continue to meet the combatant commander's requirements for the A-10. And we had that short period of time where, as we were swapping out airplanes in the AOR in order to put the right A-10s in place there, we just upped the sortie count on some of the airplanes that were already in place there. And to the ground commander, there was no loss of capability as far as having a close air support capability over.
Captain Figgard, if I may, thank you, sir, for going over that. Can I just get with the bloggers and see if they have any follow-up questions? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Any of the guys, do you have any questions for Lieutenant General?
Yeah.
Chuck?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
General, with our increased capacity for the use of unmanned aerial vehicles, we are also seeing that a number of nation states other than us have the same capacity. What kind of UAV countermeasures studies would your organization be involved in, considering the potential for terrorists or narcotics runners or even enemy nation states to use UAVs in the way that we are?
Yeah, that's a great question. And usually when a general officer says that, he has no idea how to immediately answer that. With that being said, you know, we've been spoiled by the fact that we've kind of been the big dog in this fight with regard to owning the airspace and therefore not worrying about, you know, anyone challenging our UASs or, in fact, challenging us with their own UAS capability. So that's an area that our folks, you know, out at the Weapons Center, out at Nellis, our folks that sit there in our tactics development teams continue to look at that when we in the future potentially encounter a near peer or an asymmetric threat out there or a terrorist organization that has a UAS capability, we're going to certainly need to be working toward tactics, techniques, and procedures that we can counter those capabilities in order for us to continue to do the things we do, which is own the airspace to allow freedom of maneuver for our ground forces. So if I gave you any more, I'd be talking, you know, basically just on Northside's opinion. But I will tell you there's a lot of smart captains and majors out there that are putting efforts toward that time when drug organizations, terrorist organizations, or near peers have that capability of doing the things that you see us do in OEF and OIF on a day-to-day basis, with not only the MQ-1 and MQ-9, but also with the global walkover.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Any of the bloggers have any one last final-up question? Anybody else?
Colin here.
Okay, go ahead, Colin.
Sir, there's been discussion for months now as to whether the Air Force is truly committed to deploying sufficient UAVs or, you know, moving the money into those accounts or not. Has this question been finally answered, and under the new leadership, is the Air Force committed wholeheartedly to investing in UAVs to the, I guess, with the same fervor that they do to manned fixed-wing aircraft?
Well, I absolutely believe that's true. The United States Air Force is all in. We understand the Secretary Gates's direction. In fact, 85% of our theater-wide capability UASs are in the AOR, and the 15% that are home are in order for us to continue to train future UAS pilots and sensor operators, as well as do that critical test and development that we need to do in order to continue to enhance and refine our tactics, techniques, and procedures.
I'm sorry, sir, what was that first statistic?
85% of our theater-wide capability UASs, i.e. the MQ-1, the MQ-9, I guess you could even say the Global Hawk, but 85% of what we own is in the AOR.
Okay.
And the 15% that isn't, therefore, in order to keep the schoolhouse going, in order to continue to train future UAS pilots and sensor operators. I would tell you that we will, in the next, over the period of the next 5 years, buy more unmanned vehicles than we will buy manned vehicles. So I think that makes a very pointed statement about our commitment to the future of UASs and what it brings to the fight and meeting the demands and the requirements of the combatant commanders out there. Over.
Hey, Lieutenant Craig?
Yes, Captain.
If you don't mind, let's take a question from the room here.
Roger that. Go ahead.
General Sec, Amy Butler from Aviation. I was just curious, with regard to Venezuela's military activities and their training with countries like Russia, has that allowed you to have a little bit more support through assets in theater, a little bit more focus, because I know a lot of assets have been focused on Iraq and Afghanistan.
Amy, actually, we've seen no change in the amount of assets that we have in theater. And the assets that we do have in theater are predominantly focused on the counter-drug business, as well as working in an ISR collaborative way with the Colombian military as we continue to work their issues with the FARC, as well as their play in the counter-narcotics business. My boss, Admiral Stavridis, has come up voice numerous times, questioning, as well as the OSD, as well as the Department of State, as far as the need that Venezuela feels they need with regard to these capabilities that they're bringing into the theater there. But we don't see it as a forcing function for us to do anything different than we're doing right now.
Okay. And I think last time you spoke with us, you mentioned a group effort to try to encourage nations that don't have as much resources to jointly buy some helicopter assets. How's that going?
We're still working the funding issue. Our Admiral Stavridis has made this regional aircraft modernization program, along with a enhancement of the actual radar architecture down in the Central American area there, as fourth and fifth priorities on his priority list. So that's very good news for all of us. And we'll be then working with that priority to try to find funding streams. The Central American countries, the four ones that were involved in this initially, are still very much interested in this program. We certainly are. We realize it's not the silver bullet to stopping the flow of drugs. We realize it's not the silver bullet to bringing enhancing security and stability to the region. But it's certainly very much a piece of the puzzle as far as enhancing security, stability for that part of the world. And get us out of the business of the potential of being a future surrogate air force for that region. If I could tell you that the cost of doing that regional aircraft modernization program, which includes light transport that has multi-capability, as well as a medium lift utility helicopters, as well as a medium, say for lack of a better term, interdiction type of aircraft, when you add that up to include the radar enhancements we'd like to do, it's about $800 million. When you look at the fact that we spend $12.5 billion a month in Iraq and Afghanistan, for basically 2 days of operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, we can make this happen. And again, everyone realizes that, and it's a question of priorities. And certainly, Lawrence Seif in this room understands that our priorities right now are in Iraq and Afghanistan, but it is not a big piece of money in order to bring a great capability to further work this huge counter-drug issue that's going on in this part of the world.
A couple years ago, Venezuela put out a little bit of information about building their own indigenous aircraft production facility. I was wondering if that was something that had come across your radar at all, and if you'd heard any update about that. It was a couple years ago. I was just wondering if it had come up again.
Yeah, we have not. They obviously have seen to use their oil profits for purchasing from other nations or from other manufacturers, with the SU-30. And the potential of enhancements of their service, their missile capability there. But I see no indigenous capability coming out of that.
Okay, thank you.
Sir, to follow up on the counter-drug stuff you're talking about, what's the status of Monta? I believe it's getting out there soon, and as far as a replacement.
Right. We're tracking to leave Monta in November when the lease expires. We're working very closely as the executive agency, the Air Force, with Southern Command, OSD, Department of State, and various other interagencies and organizations that, as well as the ambassador, that have involvement in this closure process there. But our goal is to leave Monta a better place than we found it. With regard to a replacement, no word on that. We'll continue to utilize those CSLs and FOLs that we have in place right now. We'll continue to look for opportunities to involve our partner nations and other allies more in the counter-drug business. And the Ecuadorians, certainly, have not said that, hey, we're out of the counter-drug business. They'll continue to do the things that they see are necessary to prevent the flow of drugs, both from their country and through their country. So, again, nothing definite as far as a future follow-up. Again, as I think I told you once before, I would be very, very surprised if we ever saw a replication of Monta, just based on how much money we put into that and the fact that whenever you're a guest of a sovereign nation, you're welcome to be terminated at any time.
Excuse me, Captain Fager, we're going to go ahead and sign off. Thank you, General, for taking your time to speaking with us today.
Hey, bloggers, thanks very much. I mean, this is a guy that, control, alternate, delete runs my life, so to do actually blogger roundtable is like I could never thought I'd be doing that. So thanks for letting me play.
Pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.